I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, boys will be cowboys as Emilio Estevez goes on a rip-roaring rampage of revenge across the Old West after a kindly old cattle rancher gets stamped out by a bitter rival. Blood, bullets, and bad boys aplenty as we're talking 1988's Young Guns.
Can't go north because Murphy's got men coming out of Fort Sumner. He can't go south because he's got Brady coming in. East is no good because he's got John Kenny coming up now.
Let's dance!
Regulators! Let's settle up!
Objection, Your Honor.
The governor's revoked your deputization powers. You're now wanted by the legitimate law as well as those outside the law. You're being hunted by troops.
Bonnie is believed to be the captain of a deputized gang.
Billy the Kid, huh?
While in the blue corner, one for all and all for one, Musker Hounds are always ready. One for all and all for one, helping everybody. No, we're not doing Dog Tanyan and the Musker Hounds, which is a shame. But we've got the next best thing, another Tim Curry movie. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference from 1993. It's The Three Musketeers.
You're under arrest.
Five of them, three of us. Hardly seems fair.
Maybe we should give him a chance to surrender.
Excuse me, but there's four of us.
Athos, Porthos, and Aramis.
Hello.
Nice to meet you again.
Pleasure.
Now, we are prepared to resist you.
Walt Disney Pictures presents the story of the greatest heroes who ever lived.
Long live the Musketeer!
So, what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I got away with cattle. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And that's your lot this week. Chris, Tilly is away this week. But don't worry, Tilly Tots, which I've decided to name his specific fans, because he'll hate it. He'll hate it. So, Tilly Tots, he'll be back next week. But in the meantime, it's just me, V, and the. How are you, V?
Oh, I'll tell you what, two things.
What?
First of all, a bit worried.
Oh, jeez.
I was having to think, I think this show, if this show was a person, you would be its backbone. But I think Chris would be like the bag of skin to stop it from just going like, and he's not here.
Right.
So that's a bit nervous.
So what does that make you? A virus?
The heart.
Right. Sorry. That's what I was going to go for. I went virus. I meant heart.
Yeah. Second thing, I keep getting ladybirds in my hair and it's starting to get to me. So they're either attracted to, I've got a new shampoo.
Mm.
Or it's just the time of year.
Is it a real shampoo or is it one of these natural shampoos that doesn't actually clean? Like your deodorant that doesn't work.
Yeah, it is that. Yeah, because right. I'm trying to reduce my plastic use.
Yeah, sure.
So I stink and I've got bugs in my hair.
It's pretty much the rule, isn't it? Next step, hemp clothing. And then you've got the full set.
Yeah. But yeah, I keep combing ladybirds out of my hair, which I think makes me sound like on the surface, like some sort of enchanting Disney princess. But in real life, it's gross and horrible and upsetting.
It's the second one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Maybe like Mother Nature, like, here, bugs, go free. No. They bite, don't they, ladybugs?
I don't know, because I get them out of my hair so quickly. Mm. They don't get a chance to bite me on the head.
I don't know why I called it a ladybug as well. Some people
cute.
Do. Some people
children
call them,
do.
Children do, yeah. And I'm spending a lot more time with children.
Are
to
you?
Be closer to you.
But not my kids, just to clarify.
Yeah. I can't stand them. So, you're well. This is our third show that we've done without Chris.
Yeah, I can remember one. We did Brick.
We did Brick and Young Sherlock Holmes.
What's the other one?
Bill and Ted.
Oh, yeah.
One and two.
Oh, yeah. And we didn't talk about the films very much.
Yeah. So I've actually gone out of my way to write a lot of notes on film. So we don't just
talk about water slides.
The Richard Dunn Centre, just outside Doncaster. Lovely place. So these were Chris's choices this week. Young Guns versus 1993's Three Musketeers. Why? You'd have to ask him. I don't actually know, but I can tell you he is very upset that he's not here to talk about these movies. Remember in the pub last week, he was like, oh, actually, can we maybe change them?
Yeah, Power Games, isn't it? Just banging on about something he can't control.
Mm. So the clue he gave was, you met the history boys, now meet the history brats.
Nice.
Followed that up on Twitter with, fancy a curry on Thursday. So we're on Twitter at ClashPod, also on Instagram at ClashPod, and the guesses galloped in over the horizon after about 200 correct guesses a week for Stephen King month. It's good to get back to a smaller amount of right answers. So congratulations, Gemma Page, who came in second this week behind our winner, Andrew Logan. Well done, Andrew.
Well done.
Well done. Congratulations. Your prize is a new book I'm working on called Where's Tilly? It is a lot like Where's Wally, but with Chris Tilly instead. And although it might look like it, it's not just a copy of Where's Wally with a photo of Chris Tilly crudely grooved onto each individual page.
Is it fine,
crudely
Chris Tilly?
Crudely glued.
Glued, okay. Yep. Is it just a photograph of the gap and you have to try and find Chris in his gap clothes, in all the other gap clothes?
He will be mortified that you've said that because Burton.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Burton.
Yeah. Forgot he's got to deal with Burton.
Yeah.
The last man standing.
Genuinely, until he said it the other week, I was like,
they're still going.
I thought they went with CNA.
I know.
Which was his previous favourite. So just before we get to the connection section this week, we've got some news for you. We have our next live show happening. It is happening on Thursday, November the 11th at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington, London. This is our first show in a bar.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
That's a good point. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. You got to mentally prepare because I am.
Yeah. Do you know, I've taken the day off the following day.
Have you really?
Oh, apart from I've got to go to a parents' quiz at my children's school, which is also a drinking opportunity, but I mean, I can't be in a state.
I sort of didn't mean prepare for the day after. I meant prepare not to just start drinking the minute we get there.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
So we do it properly. Although we haven't thought this through, seeing as because we're doing it in a bar, the movies we're doing, Tom Cruise's Cocktail versus Coyote Ugly.
And there are going to be themed cocktails.
I'm really excited about that.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
That is exciting. Dressing up is optional.
Mm-hmm.
Not for me.
No.
Obviously.
I know.
Trying to pick which one of the Coyote Ugly cast I'm going to be going as at the moment. Exciting. You can all find all the details and buy tickets at eventbrite.co.uk. That's eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E.co.uk, by searching Clash of the Titles. We hope you can make it on November the 11th. It'd be lovely to see you there. So, connection section for these two movies. What do you got?
I've got Brat Pack on Horses. Mm. Specifically, Charlie Sheen says a little prayer. Kiefer Sutherland drinks alone in both of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then I do have a very sort of technical connection. So Young Guns was produced by Joe Roth at Morgan Creek, who was also chair of 20th Century Fox, where Roger Birnbaum was head of production. They left Fox to start Caravan Pictures as part of a deal backed by Disney to make 25 pictures, the first of which was Three Musketeers. Have some of that.
That's good.
Thank you.
Because I've got a character removes a cork from a bottle and swigs from it in both movies.
True.
That's where I am. Brothels.
Yes.
Booze. Bants. Specifically removing the cork from the bottle, done that. Horseplay. General horseplay.
I guess, yeah.
Both in terms of horseplay and playing with horses, not that, but playing on horses.
Right, yep.
Horse stunts.
Mine's better.
Yours is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For once.
Yeah, and that's it, the Brat Pack. Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen in both movies.
Yes. Film critic Leonard Maslin called Three Musketeers young swords because of that.
Yeah.
There you go. So they are literally genuinely connected.
Yeah, they are. They are. Well done, Chris. Well done. So on Thursday, Victoria is giving us a Frenchie as she talks to Three Musketeers, which means today I'm dealing with some serious beef about beef. Let me take you on a journey. Kindly old John Tunstall has two loves in this world, cattle and young boys. No, not like that. He takes in waifs and strays to work his ranch in return for a soft bed, a good meal and nothing else, okay? He's a good guy. Jesus. Anyway, John is murdered because of capitalism, man, which takes the form of business rival Jack Palance, who is from Ireland, apparently. Although you wouldn't know it from his accent, which is why people keep having to say he's from Ireland. With John dead, his boys vow revenge, or at least Emilio Estevez's Billy the Kid does, after a brief struggle for leadership with co-boy Charlie Sheen, who gracefully bows out of the race by dying after saying about seven words in the film. With all voices of reason now dead, Estevez goes full maniac, cackling at murder, guffawing at tragedy, and leading the boys to certain doom. Welcome to your protagonist, guys. Do you like him? Do you understand him? Look, this is a realistic take on Billy the Kid, so stop asking so many questions. Instead, listen to some realistic 80s power ballads over horse chasers. See? Isn't that better? No? Well, tough luck. That's the movie. Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, A Young Guns.
Very good.
Thank you very much. So, individual histories with this movie. Do you want to go first?
It's a bit embarrassing. So when Chris was like, we're going to do Young Guns, I was like, oh, brilliant. I've seen it once. I'd really, you know, can't wait to rewatch it. Fantastic.
You hadn't seen it.
I don't think I had. So, well, no, I know I haven't. I don't know why I just lied. I hadn't seen it. I think I've seen Young Guns 2.
Oh.
Because I thought I knew what it was, right. And then it was on for like 10 minutes and Terrence started going, my boys, and I was like, yeah, no, I'd remember that. So I hadn't seen it. So there we are, first time watch, an inadvertent first time watch.
Right. Jinx, first time watch for me
really?
As well. It's kind of a problem that Chris isn't here because
Did you think you'd seen it then?
No, I know. I knew I'd never seen it.
Okay.
I knew I'd never seen it because I don't really like Westerns. I realised that when I sort of thought, why haven't I seen it? I was like, I just don't watch a lot of Westerns. Tombstone is about the yes. only Western I'd count in my top maybe 30 movies.
Yeah.
Love Tombstone.
Yeah.
But that's it for Westerns and me, really. So, yeah. That said, I did come to this film with an open mind because it's sort of... It's one of those movies that I've always kind of half wanted to watch and just never got round to. And Chris likes this film. He did say that, right, didn't he?
He loves it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So having watched it, can't tell if he was joking or not.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you said that. I was really worried.
No, but we can't say that at the start. Right. This will be one of those shows where we just go,
what was that?
Fuck is this movie? So let's at least try. I've written down everything I hate.
All right, yeah.
And I think there's a thing that I like.
Okay, cool.
That comes up at some point. I'll tell you some very basic facts about the movie. So there's a line repeated a lot during interviews with the cast and filmmakers at the time this was released about how this is the truest version of the Billy the Kid story and the Lincoln County War. Not everyone seemed to get that memo, though, because Jack Palance was asked about this on set and he said, yeah, I read that. I don't know if it's true. Maybe. So I did a bit of reading about the Lincoln County War, if you're interested, the actual history of it. Lawrence Murphy, Palance's character, ran a business that charged local farmers and ranchers high prices for his goods, causing them to be resented by many local people. So to counter them, doesn't really come across this way in the film, but it was John Tunstall who set up a rival business selling them at reasonable prices. And this rivalry involved them hiring gangs, which led to Tunstall being murdered. Billy the Kid and the Regulators vow revenge on one of the Old West's most famous range wars.
So it's like supermarket wars, like Aldi versus Asda.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Or Lidl.
No, yeah. Right. Aldi versus Waitrose?
No.
Super expensive stuff, reasonably priced stuff, maybe?
Oh, no, yes,
but
actually.
But Waitrose stuff is better. I'm sorry, I've hold my hands up. It is.
It is better.
Do you do that? I think so. No, I'll say it anyway.
I'm just amazed.
Oh, no, I was going to say.
If I said Waitrose stuff is better, yeah, you would have gone, no, of course it is. No.
Well, because where you live, the Waitrose van is a common sight. And you're like, oh, my property price is protected where I live. Where I live, I see.
Every day, I'm peering, curtains twitching. I'm going, my property price.
You've never seen me do like a double take so quickly because the green van, it's either the Asda van or the Waitrose van, isn't it? Same colour. Mm-hmm. So on my street, I see the green van. I'm like, we're coming up. And then it's, oh, fuck, it's the Asda van. Never mind. I love Asda, by the way.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Yeah. I don't have a Waitrose near me. And because I don't own a car or a cycle, I couldn't cycle with shopping bags, I have to go to my local Tesco. And the one in Highgate is genuinely probably the smallest Tesco in the country. It's absolutely tiny, to the point where when they bring a new product in, they get rid of an existing product that is on their shelves. So I went in and I was like,
excuse me, have you got loo roll? They're like, no, but we do have this cashew bar.
Exactly. I literally went, where are the part baked baguettes? I like them. And he went, tuna fish. So yeah, it's a ridiculous place. But yeah, so it is exactly like Waitrose versus Lidl, but in the Old West. Do you know what? I found it really fascinating reading about the Old West. And I realised that it's because at History GCSE, we did the Old West. Like, we didn't cover, for example, World War II, like this country's history. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot about the Old West. Like, I can tell you, I think it was 1874, Joseph Glidden invented barbed wire.
Right.
Can't tell you who Hitler is.
Who Hitler is? Who Hitler was, Alex?
See? Is he dead? I don't even know.
He's roaming around Highgate Tesco.
Yeah, his brain is in one of those little push bike things.
Sure.
Did I tell you I was tired today? Right, so obviously you've got a lot of very famous faces in the film. So the so-called brain. What I meant was, like, they saved Hitler's brain. I meant, like, on a tricycle, you'd have his brain in some formaldehyde, but just the eyes. Like in RoboCop 2, where Kane's eyes are in the jar with the brain.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right, okay.
Because you were asking.
Yeah.
So the Brat Pack at this point, they were very famous.
Now, I did a little thing on this because I wondered if people might not know who the Brat Pack are or were.
Oh, go.
So it was first mentioned, the term Brat Pack, in a 1985 New York Magazine article by a writer called David Blum. So I'll read. So the list has changed over the years. So I thought before I read this article that it was anyone who was in the Breakfast Club or St. Elmo's Fire.
That's what I thought.
But when it was first mentioned, that wasn't the case. So it was just the up and coming. There was actors that hung out together, partied together, were in hits, were on their way up, were very young, very good looking, and white, actually. So his list, David Blum's initial list, but he lists them all with, he gives them like a sort of epithet kind of thing. So I'll just tell you.
Great.
So the hottest of them all, Tom Cruise, 23. I don't know if he means hot as in on fire kind of thing, because he'd done really well, or like
I imagine
looking.
He does.
Yeah. The most beautiful face, Rob Lowe. The overrated one, Judd Nelson, overrated in 1985, which is...
History didn't disagree with him.
No. The only one with an Oscar, Timothy Hutton. I don't even know who Timothy Hutton is or was.
Nope.
The one least likely to replace Marlon Brando, Matt Dillon, which is a bit harsh, but there you go. This one, right? I can't. It's the 80s. The ethnic chair, Nicolas Cage. He goes on to qualify that crazy thing to say with his ethnic looks usually land him the part of brother or best friend. And I thought, we'll see about that, won't we, David Blum? Just give it time. And then the most gifted of them all, Sean Penn. And that's the list.
Wow.
Mm.
So I always thought, like you, Breakfast Club. And then I was aware that Kiefer Sutherland was part of the Brat Pack, yeah, and Charlie Sheen, and obviously Emilio Estevez because of the Breakfast Club. So, yeah, I mean, my list is Estevez had done the Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. That's why he was hot right now. Kiefer Sutherland had just done the Lost Boys the year before. That's why he was so hot. Lou Diamond Phillips had had a massive hit the year before with La Bamba, which I watched on a coach trip to Hungary just before I threw up. And Sheen, he was kind of like the old hand, really, because he'd done Platoon and Wall Street. And there is a reason why he was in this movie, which we'll come to. And then you've got the new kids, Dermot Mulroney. This was his second film. We should do My Best Friend's Wedding.
Oh, my God, I'd love to. Mm. Oh, do you mean serious?
This is the first movie when I thought, actually, this will tick a box for you.
Yes.
And I very much enjoy it. And I think there are some serious issues in that movie. We can have fun with.
Yeah,
yeah. So we should do that. And then you've got Casey Simatsko, who had a small role up until this movie as 3D in Back to the Future. He's the member of Biff Tannen's gang who always wears the 3D glasses.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that's him. Kind of a dream lineup for a youth-aimed Western. Lou Diamond Phillips said in an interview, you have Charlie Sheen, who had just gone through the magazine cover superstar thing. That's now happening to me and Kiefer. let someone else say it. It's happened to Emilio in the past. Rude. And it's going to happen to our co-stars, Casey and Dermot. So we got to sit around at night and say, wow.
Aren't we great? Aren't we good-looking boys?
he does say, I'm sure a lot of people are hoping for any grain of information that there's a prima donna attitude on set. The guys don't get along. His trailer's bigger than mine, all this nonsense. But it's just not happening. Mostly, we play Pictionary in the Santa Fe Sheraton.
That's a lie.
Absolute bullshit.
That is bullshit.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Dude, if Pictionary means ripping tons of coke and shagging women, then yeah, it does. Bollocks. Why lie? Why lie? Everybody knows.
If you're going to lie as well, you can't go so far the other way.
You can say we have a few drinks.
Yeah,
and
the
people are like, oh, maybe I buy that. That's true.
We have a laugh, bit of a party in the hotel bar.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah. Pictionary. Shut up. So this was directed by Christopher Kane, whose other notable movies following this were the fourth Karate Kid movie, in which Ralph Macchio was replaced with Hilary Swank, and the Joe Pesci, Danny Glover, Lethal Weapon, cash-in comedy, Gone Fishing.
Perfect.
He was a family friend of Estevez and Sheen because he coached the Little League teams that they played against.
Oh, nice.
Mm, which I'll explain why I said that when we get to Charlie Sheen's casting. Apparently, the film was shot really quickly after being greenlit because they wanted to get it out during the summer holidays so kids would be able to go see their new big screen favourites. Or as Mulroney puts it during an interview, they're just jacking this movie out.
Okay, nice.
It's written by John Fusco, who's had a pretty good career in film. A fair few films based around the Old West, which has been a passion of his since he was 9 years old, which I think is a problem when it came to writing this movie. I will explain later. So he did Young Guns 1 and 2, Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, and Hidalgo.
Oh, right.
Which is a movie I really like and I know is a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But quite enjoy Hidalgo.
Okay.
It's very transportative. You're there. And because Viggo Mortensen loves horses, in real life, you do believe the relationship he has with that horse is very moving.
Okay.
You haven't seen it, have you?
No.
You should watch it because it's all about an animal. So his inspiration, John Fusco, was to make a more realistic tale about Billy the Kid. He says, when I first saw a photo of Billy the Kid, what hit me was it didn't correspond at all with the legend of the noble bandit, the left-hander who whistled sad ballads, the lady killer. I looked at this young man in the photo and went, no, there's something else here. This is a ferret in a derby. Ferret in a derby, band name called it. So budget was $11 million, big hit, which is why we got the sequel, $56 million on an $11 million budget. Not bad.
It's all right, yeah.
I mean, not huge, but certainly not bad. You ready to go through this bad boy?
Yeah, I think so.
You don't seem sure.
I tell you what, it's because of the, I knew it was going to be like this, but it's the opening credits with the electric guitar. Like,
oh, God.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the camera holds on each of their faces just a little bit,
too long
to make it awkward. Like they've gone, are you done? are you still on me? Can I move
it makes
now?
Sense because it's star power, but you're right. I don't know what it is. It's just, it becomes uncomfortable.
Yeah. Kind of awkward, kind of over-stylized. Then we're in Lincoln, New Mexico. where kindly Terence Stamp is taking Kiefer Sutherland for a ginger beer and a dollop of whipped cream.
Yeah.
However, I mean, Kiefer isn't interested in this Mary Poppins bullshit.
Because he's like 25 years old for a start. If they were, the whole thing, like, Terence Stamp is quite a big presence. Like, he's quite menacing. He's in this. Like, he's not meant to be. He's meant to be your kindly benefactor. But keep referring to them all the time as boys when they're patently not boys, they're men. And he's just, you know, he's like, I've got a soft spot for runaways. And you think, oh, I bet you fucking do, don't you? Like, they're vulnerable, in your words, young men, with no recourse to the law if you do decide on payment for lodgings kind of thing.
It's weird when Jack Palance turns up and starts basically accusing him of being a kiddie fiddler.
And you agree with him.
Or not even a kiddie fiddler, because they're adults, but of going, oh, yeah, I'm sure you like to...
Yeah, I bet you do.
Educate in Irish, though. I'm sure you like to educate... I'm Irish. Educate your young boys. You're like, nah, you're supposed to be a dick, but that's what I've been thinking for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and the trouble is, you... If he was asking for nothing in return, I think he does say that, but there's the scene where Emilio Estevez... when they've rescued him, he won't read after dinner. And John says to him in this really, after he's chided them about their table manners, which is such a power move as well. It's really dad thing to do, like very, that's weird. And he says, you read or you get out. So it's like, you've got like your kink. Do you know what I mean?
Read slower.
Read to me.
Slower. Read it slower. Now faster. Now read faster. Read it faster. Oh, that's right.
That's what I mean. Oh, yuck. That's what I thought. So it just it took me a while to get over that and get my eye in with the film. Because I was like, you clearly, there is something going on here.
Yeah. Well, Billy shows up very early on, a young male on the run from the law, which makes him perfect material for Terence's workforce on his ranch, or as he calls them, his dregs, the flotsam and jetsam of frontier society. Mm. We prefer regulators. Well, I call you dregs.
I'm your daddy, so I get to choose.
Can we not go regulators? Maybe dregulators, but that's as far as I'll go. Billy, for some reason, immediately goes to war with a pig. He actually threatens a pig by pulling his gun on it.
Yes.
Now, admittedly, he has been told at this point, pigs are smarter than dogs. Mm. So you can forgive him for thinking a pig recognises what a firearm is and feels genuinely threatened. But Emilio describes him as a reactive character. Chris, the director, said that he never wanted to see Billy thinking. This is Emilio's words. He never wanted to see Billy thinking. As an actor, you are trained to think on camera. So I'm having to unlearn everything.
Wow.
That's his description of Billy, his character. So he's had to unlearn everything, including presumably the mental capacity of a pig. Mm. Anyway, before Billy can defeat his porcine nemesis, a real villain turns up, Jack Palance, who threatens to Terence Stamp's good name with all his, like, oh, educating young boys stuff, to which Stamp sort of goes, in what is maybe the funniest line in the movie, I will not ignore political corruption. I'm English.
Oh, yeah. I quite like that. Yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird that he's English, but I quite liked that. I couldn't really tell what Jack Palance was saying, to be honest, apart from then when he's like talking about a beef outfit, which I was like, well, all of a sudden we're into like small consumerist politics kind of thing, which I wasn't expecting.
Or Lady Gaga at an award show.
True. And then he's having this fight and then he's like, get ready for hell. And it's like, where did that come from? Like, I thought we were talking about prices, but no.
Yeah. It's weird. I really liked Jack Palance doing this exact act in Tango and Cash. However, I don't like it here, and I don't know why.
Does it make you think of City Slickers and make you wish you were watching that?
Maybe that is it. That could be it.
Yeah.
There is a nice moment here, though. You mentioned it. I do quite like the reading scene, not because I ever saw the kink in it. Read it to me. But it's the fact that Billy, when he's handed the book, you're like, this guy's not going to know how to read. Mm. And he's got perfect reading skill, reads it out loud, no problem at all. So I think this is where my problem with the film comes from, because you're immediately like, that's interesting, because why can he read so well? Mm-hmm. I can't wait to have that question answered. Mm. And it never is.
And also, why does he want to keep that on the down low as well?
Yeah. And I think what's happened is that John Fusco is being so like interested in Billy the Kid, that throughout this movie, he drops in real events from the history / mythology of Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
which don't really ever come to fruition in the story. Mm. So we're constantly told stuff, which I think is either him making the wrong assumption that everyone is very familiar with Billy the Kid's story, too familiar in his, like, as in we're all like, oh, it's that moment. It's the moment where he meets Pat Garrett. Oh my God, I remember reading about that. I didn't even cover that in the Old West GCSE history exam. Or it's the fact that he's trying to keep Billy the Kid enigmatic in some way. Like, he doesn't want to reveal too much. When he's your fucking protagonist, you want to know a bit more about him.
Yeah.
Especially as this goes on and you're like, who the fuck is this guy? So McCluskey turns up, one of Palance's boys, who says he wants to be on stamp side. And you're like, okay, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a plant or not?
Yep.
Did you think he was a plant?
I did.
Yep, me too. So there was no or not. and also when Stamp goes, all right, regulators, let's dance. I did genuinely think it was going to be like the reading session and he was going to stand there and watch them dance with each other. I didn't know we were going to go to a party.
It's the worst party in the world, though. I hate this party.
Why do you hate this party?
It's just weird. It just seems strange. Like, and then Terrence, like, keeps talking about, but who would look after my boys? And he's like, stop saying boys. And what's Kiefer Sutherland's character called?
Doc.
Doc. So Doc's thing, like, Kiefer Sutherland looks like Kiefer Sutherland, and that is a big part of who he is, right? So for him to have this mix of, like, naivety, so when he meets Yen's son, he doesn't understand that Murphy as her guardian. So she's like, that's my guardian or my benefactor or whatever. And he doesn't understand what that means because he's an idiot. So he's like a naive poet. Yep. But he's been living a hard life. Later on, he says he's been running with other gangs. So the fact that he wouldn't recognize, like, an enslaved sex worker when he sees one, see, it feels false.
I mean, let's call it what it is. You do not cast Kiefer Sutherland as a lovesick poet.
No.
Full stop.
That's the thing. No one ever does.
That's Kiefer Sutherland there.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Sorry, what are you missing? It's Kiefer Sutherland. I'm a poet. You're like, no, you're not. This is so miscast.
Yeah.
But he does have it explained to him that she has been given. No, sorry, not given. Jack Palance took her as payment for a ruined shirt from a laundrette.
Which is pretty dark.
If you've ever been to a dry cleaner's and had something ruined,
you've been tempted.
I think that law should still exist because they are very sort of like, sorry, yeah, it's fucked. Your shirt is ruined.
Yeah.
Tough shit. And you're like, cool, give me your baby. That's the rule. Give me your baby.
There does appear to be a sign on the door, so I don't want to, but...
There should be some threat over the ruining of clothes by laundrettes and dry cleaners, and I think a gift of a child should
is
be one of those things.
Absolutely.
I might be on my own here, but I know there's a lot of people right now going, damn right, my shirt came back pink,
said it.
And I want a kid for that.
Plus, you can ruin it yourself. There's no point paying someone to ruin it.
I know. You mentioned Waitrose, but I've told you before, I do enjoy a dry clean shirt.
Yeah, I know you do.
It's just beautiful. Because I fucking hate ironing. Billy meets Pat Garrett and is like, I'll be famous as him one day. So you're like, okay, cool. Pat Garrett's in this, or is he? No, he's not. He's gone again. So it's around now when I'm going, when is Terrence Stamp going to die? Mm. I'm getting a little impatient, but bang on 25 minutes, he goes.
For that. Yep.
And you structurally, first plot point, act one over, Terrence Stamp dead. I was like, all right, okay. You get a pass there. Then Alex McSween, played by Locke from Lost.
Yay!
AKA Terry O'Quinn, gets the boys deputised, which actually happened in real life. Although in the movie, I'm also not really clear what powers this gives them, what that really means. It's like, it's kind of explained they can go out and arrest the people who murdered Terrence Stamp.
Yes, but that's all they can do.
Right.
And straight away, they just start killing everyone. Like, they're not brilliant at being deputies. And that's Billy the Kid's fault.
That is Billy the Kid's fault, because Charlie Sheen goes, who plays Dick Brewer, who was the real life leader of the Regulators. He sends Billy in first. I think it's Henry Hill is the name of the first guy. And he doesn't arrest him, but he kills him. And I quite like this moment, because this is the first time you realise Billy the Kid is a bit of a psychopath.
Yes.
The way he does it is really good. It's great because he's like laughing. And
you
he's
get
like
a lot out of a giggle.
Him.
That's the thing. Mm. It's a bit of an easy trope to fall back on. But if you murder someone and do a bit of an insane giggle, you're a psychopath. So
So Billy becomes a bit of a threat to Dick Brewer now, because it's like there's a bit of a leadership thing which comes to play later. Charlie Sheen, obviously Emilio Estevez's brother, he's in the movie. This is interesting. So he just had a movie of his cancelled. And he says, I called Emilio and I said, this is really bad. I feel like shit. Because Sheen's current project was postponed abruptly by Columbia Pictures. And so Emilio Estevez says, we haven't cast Dick Brewer yet. We can play enemies in this. It'll be really fun. Come on board. Call Chris, their childhood friend, yeah, and also director of the movie. So that's how Charlie Sheen jumps on board. The movie that Columbia postponed abruptly was Johnny Utah.
Was it?
Which is obviously the original name of Point Break.
Yeah.
Now, I never knew that he'd actually been cast in it, which I knew he was someone they looked at for it. But yeah, this sounds like they'd actually cast him, gone, the film's called Johnny Utah, and then gone, actually, fuck this.
Pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
And get then, someone else.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember reading that he was in the frame, but I don't remember reading that it had actually happened and then stopped.
Mm.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. If Chris here, he'd probably know even more and be able to add some much missed Tilly trivia. Charlie Sheen does have my favourite movie moment so far in this, when they meet the other guys they're looking for and he goes, Buenos dias, shitheads.
His accent. I mean, I can't do like a Texas or wherever they're from accent. But at first, I was like, is his name Billy or Billa? Because he's just going like, Billa? It's like, what?
I mean, in the accent department, no one comes out very well in
this.
That's
true.
McCluskey's death is good here, though, because you kind of think he's a traitor, as we established.
I know, but it is good, but you need to be sure. And it doesn't seem to me, he doesn't have a tell or something like that. So Billy the Kid has got his number. He's like, I know. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Burner. Bang. Mm. Awesome. But if you were the rest of the gang, you'd be like, but what is it exactly that gave him away?
But isn't that the point? Isn't it the point that Billy is like, that there is nothing that gives him away and he still does it and it's like, I just go on my instincts and sure, I do what I want, but and that makes them all nervous.
Yeah, but you want the audience. I mean, maybe you don't actually, having said that. Like, maybe you do want to feel a bit wrong-footed by him, I suppose. It makes it a bit more of an exciting ride, doesn't it? Like, if you're not sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
For me, it was the fact that when he goes, I think, whose side are you on? And Clancy goes, I'm with you, which is his accent. And, and then Billy sort of looks like he's not going to shoot him.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure he is by now. And if they're going to drag this, oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
That was great. Really immediate sort of response.
Yeah. The only strange moment is they end that scene with Kiefer Sutherland staring after the body like he's never seen such horror in his life. It's like, blatantly have. Like, he's like, oh, the inhumanity.
A sex worker? Death. He's a new idea.
Here in this, in the Wild West.
Wild West. I've just been calling it the West. This is insane.
I don't want to be here.
You people are maniacs. What do you do after you've watched someone gunned down? Get fucking high.
Yeah, trip your nuts off.
Peyote. According to Lou Diamond Phillips, this is the first time there's been a surreal drug scene in a Western.
Okay, but I'm like you, I'm not a massive fan of Western, so I can't contradict that, but it feels right.
I'm sort of enjoying the film a lot more now. I didn't, weirdly, it's normally the setup of a film that I sort of like, oh, all right, I like this, and then you get to the middle act and it all starts to feel a bit floppy.
Sure.
And here, I'm enjoying McCluskey's death, I'm enjoying Emilio Estevez being a psycho, and I like the peyote scene, I like Kiefer Sutherland in slow-mo.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Estevez trying to twirl his gun and it flying off. Love a bit of slapstick.
Yeah.
Him riding backwards through the Native American village on the horse.
Oh, yeah.
Funny. This is funny stuff.
It is funny. It's a brave thing to do, considering, and I know they do make light of this within the scene itself, but everyone's got a gun and they're being pursued. Now, to me, I've never done peyote, but if I was going to do it, I would need to be so relaxed and I need to have all external factors like locked down, like no one's going to even come in the same room or whatever. Yeah, like,
never mind people trying to kill you.
Yeah, you've got a loaded weapon.
I wrote down the same thing. It's like doing peyote on a fucking cliff. Yeah. Like when you're being chased and you've got firearms is insane.
Isn't that, it's not relaxing.
So there you go, kids.
Yeah, if you're going to do it.
If you're going to do peyote, nice duvet. Maybe some Pixar movies.
Only your actual best friends in the whole world.
Yeah, not upstairs in Henry's room.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Why? I was your best friend and you did it with other people. And then you came down and were like,
help me. And I was like, actually,
I'm not going to.
No, because yeah. you did it without me.
I was like, oh, what are you watching there, Alex? You're like, delicatessen watches. Like, I can't. Please get me home. No, watch delicatessen. Shut up.
Do you know of all the things that I've done to you? That still sticks in my throat as a bad thing that I did.
It was a bad thing.
It was a bad thing. All you were looking for was like, can you maybe just get me a taxi home?
That's I'm all
like,
I wanted you to do.
I'm not going to help you because though you were with other people. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
There's your apology. Sorry about that. Right then. On that history lesson, let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Abroad in Japan is the Stack podcast that brings you a taste of life in Japan. Recently, Chris Broad was joined by NHK contributor and legendary video game streamer Pete for a chat about his life as a TEFL teacher.
I one time taught a woman who was still pregnant, and I had to teach her stomach.
What?
Yes, and so...
Wait, what?
She came in, 7 months pregnant, and they're like, no, she wants you to talk to her stomach. So I was sitting there giving instruction, very specifically.
No.
She held her tummy, and she said, I think he's getting it. And I thought, oh dear God.
Just bizarre. Search Abroad in Japan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. New episodes every Wednesday and Sunday.
So, we're back now. Sheen and Estevez have a little battle about who's going to be the leader. I kind of feel that Sheen needed more screen time.
I agree.
I feel that, especially as... we get a scene now where, which is another, this is a bit silly. So Buckshot Roberts, a bounty hunter, turns up and literally says, as he's loading his firearm, I'm here to kill you all and collect the bounty. And they're like, come again now. And he's like, sorry, I'm going to kill you all. And you're like, there's five of you.
Yeah, how's that possible?
And he still gets the upper hand, yes, and manages to wound two of them and kill Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, I was really confused as to what was happening because... he hides the assassin, as I've called him, because I didn't know his name.
Buckshot Roberts.
Buckshot Roberts.
Real character in real life.
It was quite cool. He's quite old and grizzled, and he's like, I am going to do this, and I'm brilliant at my job, so I'm not even concerned by there being many more of you, and you've got, like, you know, you're all 21 or whatever. But he hides in a toilet, and then Charlie Sheen walks towards the toilet, yep, and then gets killed. And I have no idea how that happened.
It's an interesting one. I think he almost steals the whole movie. Brian Keith, who plays Buckshot Roberts, I think is so good in this tiny role. In real life, it was the Regulators who started a fight with Buckshot Roberts. He sounds like quite a nice guy. He rode a mule in real life. He accidentally bumped into them while riding his mule when he rode into town to see if a check had arrived, because he'd sold his ranch and his land because of the Lincoln County War. And he was only targeted because he was a business associate of Jack Palance's character in the movie. And he didn't want any part of it. And the regulators went, no, we want you. We're going to arrest you. And so he starts loading his rifle, and then they seal him in a house, and there's a gunfight, and he manages to like wound a couple of them and shoot another, and then they shoot him. And then Dick Brewer, Charlie Sheen's character in real life, Dick Brewer sort of goes, I'm getting impatient because he's not dead yet. And so goes around the side of the building behind some logs and fires where he thinks Buckshot Roberts is. And Buckshot Roberts sees the plume of smoke. And when Dick Brewer put his head up again, he blew him through the eye.
Wow.
He shot him through the eye and killed him. So he is killed in real life, Dick Brewer, by Buckshot Roberts as well.
Interesting.
And it's not dissimilar to Charlie Sheen just walking up to the shed going, doo, 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 doo.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense now.
So Charlie's dead. But weirdly, because he's not been on screen much, no emotional reaction to that.
No, I think it's a shame. The scene you were talking about when Billy the Kid and Dick Brewer are having their like man off about, I want to be the boss. The only intrigue there is that you know that they're brothers in real life, because you're like, oh, that's interesting. But if you didn't know that, the character work isn't quite there.
No. And you know me and being sentimental for animals, the scene that actually affects me the most in Charlie Sheen's death is when they all ride off and they leave his still tied to the post. And it's like, I want to go with my mates.
Yeah.
And it can't because its master's dead.
Yeah, and it's not even free to roam.
Exactly.
It's just going to stay there.
And starve.
Maybe. Someone will find it.
I hope so.
They will.
I got a little bit upset. So that was my most tearful moment in this whole film. So then, Emilio's in charge. Kiefer leaves because he's like, I'm in love.
With someone I met for 10 seconds.
Bye-bye. Yen Sun, I'm coming to surprise you. And
at work. She's literally at work, Doc. And you will get her killed. Like, I know it's of its time, not of the Wild West, but I think more of like the 80s. Like, when she's, the scene earlier when she's walking down the street and he's like, I want to give you this bunch of scratty flowers. And she's like, I really can't take those because... She doesn't say it because it's the 80s, but she's like, I will get killed. If my boss sees you with me, I'll get killed. So can you please fuck off? And then he gets mad with her and he's being, I'm a gentle poet. And then he's like, stop. And it's like, don't be a dick. Don't be a dick to her. And she does her best to be like, I love you, but I can't do this, whatever. And then to make it worse, she's at work in bed doing what she has to do. And he bounds in like an idiot. And he's like, come with me. She's like, you're going to get her killed.
Yeah, it's quite a weird scene because she goes, my benefactor, my protector has told me that you're a bandit. And that's not enough, though. You're a bandit who's going to cut me up into little pieces and eat me. Yes. But she does a very fast 360 where she then goes, I keep a box in my brain with the flowers you gave me in them. And you're like, so which one is it?
Yeah.
Going to be eaten or flowers
or
in
I'm
box?
Quite pleased to see you.
So that's confusing. And also, Kiefer, I think, has run off because Lou Diamond Phillips is going to do a big speech. And he's like,
oh, no.
I'm not sticking around for this. I don't mind this speech. I think some of the language is quite good. I think it gives you an idea of the violence of the Old West,
yes.
A bit where he talks about his mother being cut from the privates to her neck by a saber. And you're like, oof.
Yeah.
He's good in this. And it also works because this is the first time you've really got this moment where they're going, Billy, we're not sure about your plan.
Yeah.
We're not going to follow you. And you're like, okay, good. Dissent within the ranks. This same beat is repeated about 27 times
that's
of
true,
like,
yeah.
Billy, we don't think this is a good idea. Yeah. All right, then.
Yeah,
fine.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we'll do it then.
Yeah.
And it just keeps over and over again. And you're like, you just get worn down by it.
I think it's the Lou Diamond Phillips speech is good to contextualize everything. But being mean, and not on it, because it is a good performance, but you are on the run. Like, there isn't time to be like, let me tell you about my pain. Like, it's important, but it in the real world, being on the run, you'd be like, can we do this while we're moving?
Yeah, it is. It is. And he's standing aloft, like exposed on top of a ridge going, I'm silhouetted against the sun.
Yeah.
Easy prey for any sniper. But let me tell you about the trust hoop. Something like that. I can't remember. I didn't write it down. The trust hoop is telling me to go west, but you can be part of my trust hoop if you come with me. It's like, and then Billy goes, I get this trust hoop thing. I've got my own trust hoop.
Yeah.
do you want to be in my trust too? Anyway. Estevez kills Sheriff Brady, a legitimate law enforcement official, making them actual outlaws. Alex McSween turns up again, having been somewhere. And he's like, what have you done, Billy? I'm off to write to President Hayes, who gets enough mentions in the film. I expected him to turn up in the final act and go, I pardon these boys.
True, yeah. Sorry about all this.
Yeah. He keeps getting mentioned and he never appears.
Yeah.
When the army turn up, I'm like, and then the president? Yeah. Where is he? Because President Hayes has had 62 mentions. So the stakes have been upped, though, because they're going to get hanged.
Yeah, so the character, the Charlie character,
mm.
He's really worried about them hanging, and he's got a bit of an arc, but I'm not entirely sure what he thought would happen, because from the get-go, they've not been amazing at being deputies because they keep slaughtering everybody.
Yeah.
So... you got hanged, didn't you, back then for fuck all, basically. Mm. So if you slaughtered loads of people, probably going to get a hanging.
Oh, you mean the bit where he's like, no, this is, things have changed now, yeah. Billy.
Now we're going to get hanged. What about when you shot like 8 people?
Yeah, but I mean, he has got a great reaction to the news that he might be hanged, which is to visit the sex worker who took his virginity for a hug.
Yeah.
Which is apparently the same price as sex.
To haggle.
She's like, just so you know, it all costs the same. It's like, that doesn't seem right. You should put up a sign where just listing those prices. That feels very off the cuff.
Really? I think she's fair enough because the same amount of time has been taken. She could be. Why should she lose out?
Yeah, I don't know. I just... is it a question of time or is it a question of
effort,
energy expended?
Yeah. Risk, I guess.
Yeah. I just feel she should have done him a deal.
I feel you're bringing something else to the table here and that's best left where it was.
Fine. There's some more myth building here about the real life legend of Billy the Kid when he kills a Texas bounty hunter in a bar. Which is a great scene.
Yes, I like this very much. I mean, I'm into it much more now, like you said, because Billy's activism has been made more clear to me, because the stakes are super high, because they're on the run, because they're going to die. And he's like, I will get the president's attention like this. And the violence and what they've been up to as an act of revolution now makes sense to me. So I was like, oh, I'm with you now. I get this whole, I don't know much about Billy the Kid for real. So it had to be explained to me in a bit more sort of explicit terms. So now that I understand that he's a working class hero, I'm more into it.
Does it say, so, okay, because my problem with this scene was I just didn't feel it served the plot in any way. It was just sort of...
It's just a chance for him to show off a bit, isn't it?
It's a chance for him to show off, but it just felt like this Texas bounty hunter was like going, and he whistled sad ballads.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's true. That's a fact about Billy the Kid. And then Emilio Estevez whistles a sad ballad, and you're like, oh, and so...
It suffers from the thing that we talk about a lot, which you could lift that scene and you could put it maybe 10 minutes earlier or 10 minutes later and it wouldn't make any difference.
Exactly, which I think is a problem. Then the whole thing gets a very Butch and Sundance with John Kenny and his super posse chasing them. John Kenny is, like, talked about as this terrifying force of nature.
Mm.
Doesn't look like that. That horse is straining. it really is. But that's not my worst problem. They ride through some thorns.
Yes.
Cut to Lou Diamond Phillips, who is pulling the thorns out of Dermot Mulroney's buttocks and then using a whiskey from a bottle to clean the wound by pressing the lip of the bottle against the buttock.
Yeah.
Dermot Mulroney's character is called Dirty Steve Stevens. And he is filthy.
Yeah.
He presses the bottle, the lip of the bottle against the buttock.
Mm.
And then he swigs from it. I love a whiskey.
But yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah, there is a line.
That's just basic hygiene.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a problem. So then we have time for another party. Our second party of the movie.
And Charlie gets married?
This is clearly here, in my opinion, so that to go, Charlie's going to die and it's going to be sad because he's just got married.
But who does he marry? When did that happen? Did they know each other?
No.
They had a dance and then cut to she's in a wedding dress.
Oh, what do you fucking need, Vicky? Jesus. No wonder you haven't got married.
I am a demanding person. It's my own fault.
That's all it should take.
Yeah.
A dance.
Look at me. What do I want? What do I expect? Someone like you? No.
There's a good moment here where Pat Garrett turns up to set this trap for the final act. And it's the bit where Billy turns his back on him and Pat Garrett is out of focus, but it looks like he's going for his gun.
Oh, I didn't notice.
And then he doesn't. Okay. Billy goes, "Are you my friend, Pat?"
Yeah, I guess.
But in real life, it's because I think that the interesting thing here, which I think, you know, it's about sort of taking the real history and then just using it for an interesting point in the film. Actually, I don't know if that works.
I think the trouble is, if once I came to this film, well, obviously I already thought I'd seen it, but you're like, if you were in the 80s, you're like, oh my God, I want to see those men do this thing. Do you care about the thing as much as you care about seeing your guys? Like, so if you're going to weave in, if you're going to do like a little historical Easter egg kind of thing, it needs to play second fiddle to seeing the boys do what they do.
Right.
And I don't think there's enough of that in this film.
Exactly. So Pat Garrett really did kill Billy the Kid eventually, as the legend goes, and he shot him in the back. So that is a little nod to like, that is how Billy will eventually die.
Yeah.
But until you know that,
if you don't know it, then
it's just like,
it's confusing. Yeah.
So, again, like I said at the start, I do think the writer Fusco.
Yeah, John.
John, thank you. John Fusco. I think it's just this assumption that people are like, oh, that bit. And you're like, no, don't know. Sorry, John. So they go to Lincoln for the final showdown. It turns out Alex McSween is ill, which is new information, and utterly pointless.
Yeah, that's true. Because he doesn't do... Oh, no, he does sacrifice himself a bit, doesn't he? Or does he just walk into the line of fire? I'm not sure.
Well, we'll get to that, because before that, we've got this prolonged standoff.
I don't like the shootout. I mean, a shootout can be fun, but they don't make enough of the geography of the house. So they're basically in one room. They hide by the same window. You could have gone to the cellar. You could have gone wherever, but they don't. And it's only when... Oh, actually, and then the baddies try to set it on fire, but it's not really even on fire. It's like a bit smoky, so that it doesn't feel like a big threat. And then until Billy the Kid hides in a trunk, which is awesome... I was just like, I'm not into it. It made me laugh and I thought it was fun. Although it made me think he's a very small person.
I just...
didn't like it.
I mean, it's exactly the kind of moment that I'm like, yes, that's cool.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get past the fact that he is thrown out of a first floor window in a trunk and then it lands and he just suddenly springs out and goes, ba 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 ba, and you're like... Yeah. You know, at least disorientated, if not injured. One of the two.
Yeah.
So it's a stretch, even for me, and I love shit like that. Diamond Phillips, Kiefer, and Billy escape. Dirty Steve and Charlie are gunned down. Charlie, apparently, despite being married, is intent on taking down John Kenny.
Yeah.
He's like, "You mean you, John Kenny? Me and you! Me and you!" Like, you haven't mentioned him until this point in the movie. Where did this vendetta come from?
And also, Billy the Kid is really stalking that fire. He's like, "Go for it, Charlie." It's like, but he just got married and he's got no skin in this game, really. Like, no.
Yep. And then, as you mentioned, poor Alex McSween is the one who gets all 8 barrels of a gasoline gun.
Yeah. Just for being their lawyer.
I tried to work it out, and I think it's because he mentions earlier when you're like, "Sorry, what? You're ill, but your life insurance means you can't hold a gun." Okay, right, Alex McSween. So I think it's the fact that he comes out surrendering and he still gets gunned down means that his life insurance policy remains intact because he's not killed in a firefight because he's unarmed.
Oh, I see.
And the army kill him anyway, which means that his wife, Susan, who's fucking great in this
She's brilliant,
who's like unfazed by anything for most of it. She's like, "Shut up," and then, "I'm going to slap you around the face."
Yeah.
Like I'm like Mrs. Kittner in Jaws. You get slap. So, he gets gunned down. She gets the money and gets to build an empire in honor of him and John Tunstall. And you think it's all over. And I'm sort of like, what? And then it is great. Where Jack Palance is like, "Oh, God damn, they got away, I'm Irish." And Billy the Kid just rides back in and goes, repeat, my catchphrase for the movie. I've used it 3 times.
Yeah.
And shoots him in the head. And it's like, oh, yes.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'll take that.
And I do like I don't normally enjoy a postscript because I don't know, just can be a bit lazy, but I do really like this postscript. And I like the fact that Susan is like the boss of the beef now. And
so what happens? So she does really well. She takes the life insurance and in honor of Terrence Stamp's character and Terry O'Quinn's character, basically builds this empire
of beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A beef empire.
Yeah.
A beef empire.
Beef.
Really?
I can't. I'm so rubbish and stuff like that. I don't even know why I bother. Why dip your toe in? I never learn.
I wouldn't be the same if you didn't try, though. So nice. So nice.
It just makes you look better.
But do you like the postscript? So Chavez y Chavez, Lou Diamond Phillips' character, goes to California and works on a fruit farm.
See, that was, I mean, I like knowing what happened to them, but that doesn't sound like a happy ending, because I think working on a fruit farm back then would probably be quite hard work, yeah, and exploitative, like, and all the rest of it.
Kiefer goes east. Doc goes east with Yun Sen.
Yeah.
And they have a great time, great
sure,
life.
Because they're made for each other. Mm, they know each other so well.
Yeah. They've got on like a house on fire.
They have, yeah. Mm.
That should have been a joke that he used when the house was on fire and she runs into it. He's like, I know we get on like a house on fire, but this is ridiculous.
This is ridiculous.
I'll be here all night, folks. Try the meal. Then Billy the Kid gets killed by Pat Garrett eventually.
Yeah.
Shot. And is it in the back, in the dark, unarmed or something? Basically, no, it's like Billy would have won if Pat Garrett hadn't cheated.
Been so sneaky. Mm. Yeah.
And that's your lot. Any more for any more?
No, well done.
Thanks. Thanks. I mean,
I was worried about that one.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm glad you didn't tell me at the top.
Sorry.
Why were you worried about it particularly?
Just because I found it quite... it's my own fault, but I came into being like, can't wait to watch this. I was like, fuck, I've never seen it. Mm. So I just was playing catch
up. You thought it was Tombstone, didn't you? Which is a great film.
I mean, very possibly. I don't know. I thought it was funnier than it was.
And yeah.
It is funny. It is funny in parts, but I thought it was going to be... I don't think it was going to be Hot Shots, but I thought it was going to be, like, funny.
Yeah. Maybe a bit more like The Three Musketeers.
Yeah, which which P.S. I fucking love. Oh, yeah.
Shh. Chris is
screwing. Sorry, he's not here. He's not here.
But he will check.
Yeah.
You know he will check.
I don't think he listens to the shows. I honestly don't.
Well, any of them?
Any of them, yeah.
That's really weird. I always imagine that he sort of...
listens to them the most.
Sort of in the dark, rocking back and forth.
Taking notes.
Yeah. I don't know what I expected from this movie. I think my problem was I had to watch it. I ended up watching it in three sittings because I was getting a bit bored.
Right.
So it was a three-sitting movie for me, this, which is never good.
Never good.
I was interviewing Edgar Wright on my other podcast.
Oh, my God. Did I fucking ask? No, I didn't.
Just the facts. You should check it out.
I'm not going to. I'm sorry, but
Seriously, he made a really good analogy, which was like the reason movies should be watched in the cinema is because it's like a train. A movie's like a train, and once it starts going, you can't get off until it stops. Whereas, you know, in a cinema, if you go to the toilet, the movie's still going on. But obviously, at home, you can go, pause, I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
which is, you know, it's not the right way
not
to watch
the idea,
a movie.
Yeah.
That was a little snippet of...
for just the fact.
Let's do the bits. Best scene.
Tripping on PLT. Just because it's something I would hate. I mean, I'd hate to do now.
A long time ago. Different time.
Very different times. A lot of other things to worry about now that would make it an unpleasant experience.
Yeah, but, isn't it weird?
Yeah.
Like, responsibility ruins peyote.
It does, isn't it? Just of all the things you didn't have to worry about, and you can't walk into that with any concerns. That's why I was amazed that they did it. If you've got a niggling doubt or an insecurity about anything, do not take acid.
Although, just to flip it around, if you did, I would get you a cab now. I am a better person.
Well, that's worth knowing. Yeah. That does make me feel... Maybe I'm so...
If we're in the same building, I'm not going to come...
Right, I see.
I'm not going to come down to Lewisham.
Yeah.
Do you know how long that... I've told you before. It's a long cab
maybe
ride.
Maybe a lot of my anxiety about tripping is because of that, because I got trapped. Big Dave had to carry me down the stairs.
Oh, my God.
I know. You know, you put me in a cab, obviously, and I had to get carried out at the other end. Someone met me at my house.
Is he here now? No. Would he do it now? No.
No.
Exactly.
But you would, so it's fine. So, yeah, I was jealous because it does look like... when they started taking it at nighttime, I was like, no, I couldn't do that. But when it's daytime, doing something like that in the daytime is fun because it feels safer and it just feels funnier because it's like breaks all the rules. Obviously, you'd get up to all sorts of naughtiness at nighttime, but in the daytime to be doing that did look like fun. And I just think as well, it doesn't add to the plot, but it is a lot of fun to watch them do that. So that's why it's my favourite scene.
Mine is Billy killing Murphy at the very end with the line, "Reap it, Murphy."
Yeah, it's a good scene.
It's great. I was like, oh... It ends on a high, which I think is important for this movie.
Yeah, agreed.
MVW.
Emilio Estevez.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I went on a journey with him because at first I did find him really annoying and grating and that little giggle. I just found that, you know, I've read stuff about this is a really great version of Billy the Kid, you know, in the week.
Realistic version, yeah.
Yeah, but when you heard that giggle, you're like, why are you ruining everybody's plans, Billy? Like, what's... Because, like you say, it's a bit of a weird journey for the hero. because he disrupts everything almost immediately by killing Henry Hill.
Yeah.
So that was odd for me because I don't know anything much about Billy the Kid. But then I went on the journey with him where he sort of changed into enough of this sort of working class hero and, you know, who changed history probably, I think. And I don't know if that's true, but that's what I got from his rendition of that character.
See, I wanted to know where he came from. Like, I don't think it's even mentioned. I might be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I don't think it's even mentioned that the real life Billy the Kid didn't have a father figure in his life. Which is why when Terence Stamp dies, John Tunstall in real life, it sort of drove him. He was like, right,
yeah,
I've lost my new father figure.
Yeah.
Having not had my old father figure, I'm after revenge.
Yeah.
Now, to me, if that was in the movie, you'd be like, okay, I'm with this journey. To me, he's just chaos. Like, which is fine if it's the fucking Joker.
Yeah.
But for your protagonist, the person who you're meant to be like, I empathize with this person. I'm on this person's journey. I get them. I like them. He just doesn't have any of that for me. He just seems like a man who is totally self-centered.
Mm.
It's all about ego for him. And in pursuing that ego trip, he gets loads of people killed.
Yes.
Which I
think the chaos thing, you are right, because when he kept banging on about John Tunstall, it's like you didn't know him that well. You didn't know him as well as the others. You'd only been there 10 minutes. So you're pushing this point because you want to justify this chaos. But then I think the political acts that he does, he sort of says it to justify his actions, and then he kind of convinces himself that that's the journey he's on. And then I fell in with that.
Okay. He wasn't likable enough for me to go on that journey. I'm picking Brian Keith as Buckshot Roberts.
Yeah, fair enough.
In about 30 seconds, I'm like, just that grizzled old buffalo hunter, like in the animal skins. I was like, yeah, really good. So what would you change?
Right, you'll like this. I've thought a lot about this.
Okay.
Right? So when Billy the Kid fools the Texan bounty hunter, the assassin in the bar with whistling the mournful tune.
Yep.
I found that excruciating. I find whistling quite excruciating anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be really brilliant at it. And I don't think he is. Anyway. You're not. I mean, that's fine. You can whistle,
right.
But it's just a bit. No, I can't.
Oh, there it is. I knew it. That's why. It's because you can't whistle. That's
why you want to be able. I want to be able to do the proper
the wolf whistle. Yeah, I can't do that.
I don't want a wolf whistle. You know, like
yeah, but it's most of the time when people do the fingers in the mouth is to go. I can't do it. Yeah. No, I can't do it.
You can. That was better. So anyway, here we are. Right. So I would have done that. With the right hand, left hand thing, because the newspaper says that Billy the Kid is left handed. So bear with me, right? Watch the scene. Imagine it being written like this. Okay. Ready? So Billy, at this point, has got a gun on the Texan bounty hunter, right? Billy has got the upper hand. He's got his gun on him, right? And it's in his right hand. So the shooter is like, bullshit, you're not Billy the Kid. The kid's left handed. So stop having me on, right? And then Billy goes, oh yeah, swaps hands, shoots him dead in the head. Then Doc says to him, I didn't know you were actually left handed. And he goes, I'm not, but it's always good to practice.
Oh.
Yeah! That's a better scene.
Like the reverse of the Blazing Saddles, Gene Wilder. Yeah, but I shoot with this hand.
Yeah, right. Basically. Because it would have been better. That's my only change.
My change, we've covered, I think it's admirable wanting to do a realistic version of Billy the Kid's story, but in its attempt to include all sorts of famous events in Billy's actual life, it loses the momentum of the film and makes for just choppy storytelling. And it should have leaned more into being a fictional story. I think you said it yourself earlier. There are things that you want to see this gang do, like that are fun and kind of humorous and funny, and the banter is a little more, you know, Hollywood as opposed to sort of like, oh, depressing,
beef
old
outfit.
West, beef outfit. I just think it should have leaned more into having fun as opposed to being realistic, considering the kind of film it was. So that is Young Guns done. Let's look ahead to next week. There's no quiz. Sorry. I was going to write one, but...
I thought about doing it for you as well. She's so sadistic.
Yeah.
Because it's getting to the point where I don't really enjoy it.
I am enjoying it because I'm winning a lot at the moment. But yeah, so there's no quiz this week because Chris isn't here. So let's move on to next week, which is your week, Victoria.
Yeah.
What is the clue for the clash pairing on next week's shows?
Are you ready?
Mm.
I will always take a bullet for you apart from that one time I didn't.
Oh, because I know where they are. That's very good.
Thank you.
That's very good. Okay, one more time though.
I will always take a bullet for you apart from that one time I didn't.
Lovely stuff. Before next week, though, we're obviously back on Thursday talking 1993's The Three Musketeers. Don't forget, you can get tickets for our live show on November the 11th here in London at the Loading Bar, Stoke Newington. You do that on eventbrite.co.uk. Just tap into the search bar, Clash of the Titles. All the details about the event come up. It is Cocktail versus Coyote Ugly. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you have the time. It's a great help. And check in with us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Back Thursday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.